in reference to the event. This is a clear proof that this international usurious damnable economy, which America uses along with its military power to impose infidelity and humiliation on people, can easily collapse. Thanks to God Almighty, those blessed attacks, as they themselves admitted, have inflicted on the New York and other markets more than $1 trillion in losses. The losses taught those arrogant people who see freedom as meaningless, if not belonging to the white race, a rough lesson, end quote. And then I also want to, I have a quote here from the Honorable Elijah Muhammad in his book, Message to the Black Man in America. There is much misunderstanding among us because of our inferior knowledge of self. We have been to schools where they do not teach us the knowledge of self. We have been to the schools of our slave master children. We have been to their schools and gone as far as they allowed us to go. Now, I appreciate your patience. I want to share with you really quickly just my opinion. Just my young opinion. I believe that racism, imperialism, and colonialism still very much exist, although in different forms than before. I believe that Western society and its worship of economics is incompatible with a belief in God. I respect Osama bin Laden and his destruction of the World Trade Center. And so I have a question. Does Osama bin Laden deserve more respect from Americans who believe in God? That's it.
Can you repeat the question again for me? I'm not sure I understood the question. I didn't hear it clearly enough.
Okay.
I heard everything up to the last part of the question. Now ask the question one more time.
Okay. Does Osama bin Laden deserve more respect? Does his cause deserve more respect from Americans who believe in God?
All right, thank you. His cause, if we understand his cause to be justice, he wanted justice and wanted to see the world become a more just world, fair world, to see Muslims freer, to practice their religion and have respect for their way of life, etc. If that's his cause, if that was his cause, and if that is his cause, and I do believe that in his innocence, in his own innocence, because he doesn't see himself as a guilty person, he sees himself as an innocent person, that he's fighting for the cause, for the just cause. That in his own innocence, I do believe that he sees his cause as justice, fairness, so I would say to your question, yes, we do owe it to ourselves to study what created him and his actions and to respect his cause, yes. But that still does not say, for me, I'm not saying he didn't do a horrible thing, a criminal thing. He took the lives of innocent persons and he should be caught, tried, and punished. But his case should be heard. We should know him better. There's never a justification for taking the lives of the innocent. And I will give you what God has given us in the Quran. God says, never depart from justice. Even when you are pressured by an enemy to depart from justice, never depart from doing justice. And God says, for justice is nearest to piety. Now, is it justice because we are suffering to get out at our enemies, even if it means killing innocent women, elderly persons, children? Some of them might be our friends, that if we had a day in court, they would be on our side. We don't know who we're killing. It's never, in my understanding, accepted that we kill the innocent to get at the guilty. And God says, no bearer of a burden should bear the burden of another. When we hurt or kill the innocent to get at the guilty, we are putting the burden on those persons, their families, the survivors who will mourn the loss of their family members, etc. And also, God says to us in our religion, and die not except as Muslims. And Muslim means you die as a peace-loving person obeying God, following the excellence that God prescribed for you, even in war with your enemies. We who know the history of wars in the time of our Prophet Muhammad, some of his followers were mutilated, horribly mutilated. But did he say, they have mutilated us, let's mutilate them? No. He insisted upon the best human conduct, even in war. Warfare that we see now is not accepted in Islam, and the Prophet would condemn it. They'll be punished for that kind of conduct if our Prophet was here. Their cause should be heard. Their own history as suffering people must be known. We know the suffering of the Jews, and they have our hearts, all the hearts of decent human beings. But now, should we only now look at the suffering of Jews and not also look at the suffering of others? To you, my dear brother in humanity, is that I agree with you, but I don't exactly perceive it as you perceive it, and therefore my reaction to it will not be your reaction. But I do agree with you that this world is terribly unjust, and America exports too much that is killing humanity, punishing and afflicting humanity. And we need to find answers more than muscle and power. We know we can defeat. We have the weapons of muscle to defeat anybody, any nation. But maybe we've come to the end of that kind of way of settling our problems, our differences, are getting our way. Maybe now it is time for the Western powers to do what is given in the Bible, to make their weapons into plowshares, etc., and seek other means. And I believe we are expressing the popular sentiments of the American public, and you may be surprised, also Israel's public.
I followed some of your travels through the Focolare movement, and
yes.
I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about your trip to Assisi. Just a week and a half ago, your trip to Italy to Assisi.
Can you pick it up, the mic up a little more, Emma?
Okay. Could you tell us just a little bit about your trip to Assisi?
Yes.
A week and a half ago?
Yes. Yes, thank you. Thank you. Yes, we received invitation from the Vatican, the invitation of the Pope, John Paul II, to be his guest again at the Vatican with religious leaders from around the world. And it was a great honor and a special opportunity not for me, but more importantly, for my community to be given that special invitation from such a wonderful leader for peace and purity and kindness in the world, John Paul II. What surprised me when I got there was I believe that at least a third of the participants, and there were hundreds, were notables from the Muslim world, from the various countries. I met my dear friend that I became acquainted with when I was a very young man, young like these students, Muslims, members of the Muslim Student Association, the assistant president and the others that I met here tonight. And I was a young man, and I met this person who was also a young man, came to the United States for education like many of the young Arab men did during that time and now, and they're still coming to different parts of the world for their education. And I saw him first at my father's house with about 20 or 21 other members of the Muslim Student Association of the United States and Canada. And we became acquainted. We would meet on the campus of IIT, Illinois Institute of Technology, and we would have recitation of Quran, reciting Quran in rhythmic voice, chanting, and also the congregational prayer on Friday. We'd have it together. And he's the president of the Islamic Call Society based in Libya. And I had to give you that description of him because I don't want people thinking that my friend is Gaddafi. He's a strong religious figure. And I did send greetings to Gaddafi by him, though, because Gaddafi, you know, he's another figure. And Castro, these are figures that we don't know, we don't understand. We don't know what produced these personalities, these men, their mental mindset, and what not. We don't know them, you know. All we know is the picture of him as one opposing capitalism and one fighting the United States. That's all we know. But we should look at causes behind these things. So I was able to meet many notables of Islam from around the world. I mean, scholars, great minds. And it was a great opportunity for me as a Muslim, and it was even a greater opportunity for me as a believer in God and as a human being, a member in humanity, to meet with people that I forgot who they were. I forgot they were Hindus. I forgot they were Buddhists, because we had engaged each other in such a beautiful way and were enjoying each other's company in such a beautiful way. You forget what label is on the person. A wonderful experience. Yes, and I met Kiara Lubick. I shook her hands on three occasions, and she is beautiful as she is always, and the youth and health is just radiating in her face, and she's a blessed woman indeed. So this was a great, great peak for my emotions and my spirit. Is there another question? Alaikum assalam. Do you think you might need the mic? If you just lift your voice so I can hear it. How's the secular low income people? Well, not as much as the high income people. We're going to make it, brother. Yes, there's another. Yes. Good evening. Change. I missed some of the words. Have my view of this some change. Something about it, like, what? Change what? Has it changed? Oh. Yes, okay. Yes. Well, to be truthful with you, I was not converted to my father's way from the church. When I was born, my father had been for 2 years, almost 3 years already, identifying with a new idea, a new belief. I think because of that, I was freer than most of the followers to think rationally and ignore those things that I couldn't understand. Just put them aside. Not condemn them, but just put them aside because I couldn't understand them. For example, I could never understand, and I need to tell you all this to explain, to answer your question. I could never understand, even as a boy, before I reached my teenage, I couldn't understand how a black God would create white devils to carry us through the hell that we came through. I couldn't understand that. And they gave an explanation now, but for my little mind, then and now, I can't understand it. The explanation was that God had to prove his power over evil, that he could create evil and give evil the power to rule in the world. And he would survive that. Well, in my little mind, even then, I said, he's God. He's supposed to know the answer. He's supposed to know he will survive it. So who has he proved it to? We believe that he survives alone. And nothing can harm him, you know. So it didn't make sense to me then. So as I began to become more acquainted with Islam, as Muslims believe it all over the world, from the number one source, the Quran, of course, and then I read books by Maulana Maududi of Pakistan on the life of Prophet Muhammad, easy to read books, thought books, and it just endeared me so much to Prophet Muhammad. And gradually, I saw myself facing those things that I couldn't understand and did reject, but I didn't put them down. That is, I didn't say the Honorable Elijah Muhammad told us a lie. That story about God is wrong. I didn't do that. I just left it alone. But as I began to learn more about real Islam and the real God from the Quran and Muhammad the Prophet, I began to pick those things back up again and look at them. And I saw a powerful psychology, a powerful strategy to get Islam into the heart of the poor black community. And I don't justify it, I don't excuse the lies and the wrong, but I say I appreciate the good intent of Mr. Farag and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and I pray that God will reward them for all their good, and that their good will weigh heavier on the scale than their errors that they made. In the name of goodness and God. They didn't do it against God. They did it to help bring us to God. I did change. I changed a lot. But I was changing from the time I was a little fella. I remember once we lived on 6116 Michigan in Chicago, South Side. And my father and mother was going out to the temple, to the meeting. Called them temples back then. Now, mind you, they were called temples. Called temples up until 55, maybe. Called temples. And the secret order called the Shrine of the Masons. They called that place a temple, too, you see. So they were saying something to us all along. And he didn't say it was a mosque. The place of Muslims is called mosque, not temple. He didn't say it was a mosque. It took a Jordanian who the Honorable Elijah Muhammad invited to teach us, the high school students, Arabic, so we could learn Arabic and learn to read the Quran in Arabic, to sit down and discuss with my father some problems of language that was very serious. You know, in the land of the Turks, in Turkey, they don't call Muhammad Muhammad. They call him Mehmet. That's how they pronounce it, Mehmet. You know how we were told to pronounce our name? And I've pronounced my name that up until 53 or later. Muhammad. Yeah. All of us, they ask us for our name, we say Muhammad, Wallace Muhammad, Ethel Muhammad, Lottie Muhammad, Emmanuel Muhammad. There's my brothers and sisters. Nathaniel Muhammad, Akbar. No, he came. Yes, he was. Oh, yes. Akbar, too. Akbar Muhammad. He was old enough. He got caught, too. And our places of worship called temples. Temples, the holy temples of Islam. That's what they were called. So we have a lot to understand about the teacher of my father, Mr. Farag, and my father, his obedient student, Elijah Muhammad. Yes, I'm sorry I took so much time on that, but I just wanted to share with you. Yes, so while you're coming, one day when they left me alone in that house on 6116 South Michigan, I felt afraid. The house started squeaking, you know, when the house cooled and nobody in it started making noises. So I raised my hands to pray like we were taught to pray. And I said, "Oh Allah, if I'm not seeing you correctly, please help me see you correctly." I was only about 11 or 12 years old. So yeah, I started changing early.
Yes, sir. Hello. I wanted to know what your reactions were, if any, to President Bush's State of Union speech, in which his opinions about Muslims were a little ambiguous, if not bluntly offensive, and as a result of this, Saudi Arabia and Iran, namely, have stopped all communication with America, and I wanted to know what your take on his comments were. Ooh, yeah.
I don't want to give you my opinion of his State of the Union address, but I'll say this. I read in the paper a statement from Colin Powell, Secretary of State, a man loved by most of the American people and admired and by most of the American people, I think by all of us. He said that the war on terrorism must include poverty. Must include poverty. So he is touched by the suffering of the people of Afghanistan. That very, very poor, extremely poor people, country and people. And I just wish President Bush would speak more like Colin Powell, at least at certain times.
Assalamu alaikum, Imam.
Wa alaikum assalam.
I don't have a question for you, but I have been wanting to do this for some time, and every time I get, you know, a little nervous. But I just want to thank you. I just want to thank you for teaching us. I just want to thank you for the strength that Allah has given to you. I just want to thank you for being the brother that you are and for your guidance. And I pray that Allah just continues to guide you and continues to strengthen you. And I hope you'll be back to North Carolina real soon.
Thank you very much, sister. And Allah strengthens me with the kind of support you just gave me for my spirit and my morale. You keep me very strong, people like you. And your prayers, and your prayers.
I have a quick question. I just had a question. Since coming to, like, leaving the Nation of Islam and coming to the American Muslim Society, how have you seen women's roles evolve as in some of the higher positions, like imams? Are their roles increasing?
The role of the sisters as teachers of Islam is not limited at all. We, as teachers of Islam, sisters have the same freedom and they get the same respect from the learned or the scholars of Islam that the men get for developing their minds and their knowledge of Islam and their spirit to serve God, to serve Allah, the creator of the heavens and the earth. No difference. The title Imam is a role and it's more symbolic than it is an issue. It's more symbolic. We have women making great contributions to the world, and we have men doing the same now. And it seems that women are making more progress, especially in the African American community, than our men. Times are changing. A woman, especially a mother, she has no problem saying to her son, I want you to be the man. And she has no problem raising her son to be the man. Doesn't mean that her son is going to be higher in intellect or in any other way than the mother. Maybe the mother will always be higher in intellect than the son. But something is in her nature to want to have him know that she respects him as the man. God and Islam and Christianity wants to preserve that respect in society for the male. The society, the world, was made civilized because men went out from the home They were free to do it. They didn't have to spend 9 months in carrying a child and another year or a few years caring for the child until the child could manage for itself. They were free to go out in the world and explore the world and open the world more and more to human life. So man will always be respected in religion for being the one that goes out in the public and address the problems of public life. It doesn't mean the woman is beneath the man at all, spiritually, intellectually, or any other way. It's the value of that role of man in society, in history and in society, that is preserved in religion. And sometimes the inferior saves the world, not the superior.
Oh yes, assalamu alaikum, my brother.
Wa alaikum assalam.
This is more of a, not of a question, but of a comment and a thank. For many years I've known you. I met you at your father's house many years ago.
Yes.
In the 60s, he was in Philadelphia. We were in New Jersey. My father is, my father-in-law is the Minister James Shabazz at that time in Newark, New Jersey.
Newark?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
And we was
a strong man and a great man.
Yes, sir. We was always excited about you. You know, the things in the life that you departed. And we've watched your life over the years, and we really thank God for you and the things that you're doing. And we can truly say that you are as an example. My father always lifts you up, and my family do the same thing. So I'm just came tonight, just want to thank you very much for the work and the diligence. I remember you came to Newark in 1976. I believe that was your first trip. And I think we honored you there, and we appreciate that. So we just want to thank you for that. And
thank you.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
And thank you, brother. Yes, getting back to the sister who asked the question about being the woman in the role of imam, or is the role, that role open to women. And she's from the Nation of Islam, which I am too. In the Nation of Islam, a sister can be minister. That's no problem for us. Sister, that's no problem for us. Because minister is not exactly what imam is. The ministers, they teach. They preach. Imam means one who leads the congregation in prayer. And he recites the Quran. It's not dua. Prayer is not this, asking for blessings or protection, calling on God for help or whatever. This is not Salat doing this. And in the Temple of Islam and in the Nation of Islam now, the minister lead people in dua, this, not prayer, not Salat, the formal Salat that requires that we use no language except God's word, the Quran, when we are performing that. So, in my opinion, we could have ministers now, who women, men and women, they could be ministers all together. There's no problem. But the role of imam, there is a problem. It should only be male man, not female. It doesn't say he's better than you. No. It says that's his traditional role. From the time God gave word to the first man, it was a man that spoke what God gave to the world. So it's different. I hope you understand what I'm saying, sister.
Okay. One more?
Okay.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam.
Actually, if you don't mind, I'd like to make a comment to our guests and to our audience. And it's in reference to information that's in our holy book, the Holy Quran. And I'd like to share with you what God says in the Holy Quran, because if you know what God says in our holy book, the Holy Quran, then you'll know us better. And
well, now you're helping me, you know, you're helping me with the audience. I'm not going to share any of my honorarium with you. I want you to know that.
But this kept going over in my mind over and over while I was sitting down, so I believe that it's a good thing to share. And that in the Holy Quran, God says that do not let your hatred for people cause you to swerve from justice.
Thank you.
And thank you for the very excellent speech tonight.
Thank you.
Well, not speech, I don't want to say that, but your beautiful talk.
Assalamualaikum. Thank you. So, you have one more left. Is that he?
No.
Okay, all right.
Thank you.
We thank you, ma'am, very much. Allahu Akbar. That means God is the greatest.
Be sure and join us next time for the national public broadcast of W. Dean Muhammad, Muslim American Society leader. For more on the ministry of Imam Muhammad, call 1-708-798-6653 or write Post Office Box 1061, Calumet City, Illinois, 60409. For books and tapes and videos of Imam W. Dean Muhammad, call 1-708-862-7733 or write Post Office Box 1944, Calumet City, Illinois, 60409. For Muslim journals, see local distributors. And thanks for listening.